Sergeant Morris, Reel 3. I was asking you where the other soldiers came from, and you said that they came from all sorts of different sources.
Different regiments. Mm.
How long were you actually engaged at Port Tewfik in this work?
Time plays tricks on the memory, but I would estimate I was employed at the port workshops at Suez for about 6 to 8 months, or until the beginning of February 1942. That's when I left the port workshops to rejoin my regiment.
How much warning did you have that that was going to be happening, or it was going to be a possibility?
Very little indeed. I was literally plucked from a work party by one of our Sub-Bazaar officers who knew my wishes. Mm. He'd phoned through to the officer commanding the port workshops and said that Morris had to be ready by, say, 12 o'clock, with all his kit, or what little kit I had. And there I was, waiting at the docks, put aboard a tender, and taken out to the ships that were transporting the 7th Armoured Brigade on their journey to Singapore.
How had you made your wishes known?
Well, whilst I worked at the port workshops, occasionally I would hear some of my friends who would be on leave in Cairo or would come down to Suez, and I knew that when our regiment were decimated at Sidi Rezegh, we lost all but one tank in the fight against the Germans. We knew that the regiment would be re-equipped. But at that stage, I had no inkling that they were bound for a war theatre. All I knew was that the regiment was coming with the brigade through Suez, and I wanted to get back to them.
How had you heard about Sidi Rezegh?
Well, Sidi Rezegh I knew about after the event. At the time, I didn't have a clue of how the battles were going in Egypt.
Didn't you have any information supplied to you?
We had no radios like we have nowadays. No. We knew that there was a lot of fighting going on, and we knew that we weren't doing too well, but as to how the battle was going, we didn't have a clue.
No newspapers?
No newspapers, no. There were no newspapers in those days for us.
No briefings?
No briefings. We were detailed each day to go down to the docks, and down to the docks we did, and that was our day.
When you got on to the ship from the tender, was it the ship with your regiment on it?
Yes, I was put aboard a ship called the Birchbank, which was a merchant ship loaded with all the vehicles and troops that were part of the 7th Armoured Brigade. And fortunately, I was allocated the C Squadron strength, where my brother was also a member of the squadron, so I in fact met up with my elder brother.
What was his occupation at that
time? He was a tank commander. He was a sergeant tank commander.
Had he been at Sidi Rezegh?
He was at Sidi Rezegh, yes.
Do you remember what he told you about it?
Not a great deal, because there was not a lot of talking about what had happened. All our interest was in the present situation and what we were landing into. Mm. eventually the story got out, and from other pals I learned how the regiment had been mauled by the Germans at Sidi Rezegh.
Did they say how that had happened?
Well, one hears of various official official accounts, but from what I heard, that the Germans overwhelmed the British lines, and each regiment that was overrun fought magnificently in their own way to repel the Germans, and eventually, through much heroism, this did take place, and the Germans were halted, but at a cost. Our regiment was withdrawn, or what was left of them were withdrawn, and they were re-equipped with American Honeys light tanks. And of course, the difference between the American tanks and the British tanks was great. So the tanks had to be learned. The training on the tanks had to be learned from the guns, the wireless sets, and the driving was completely different to our British tanks. But in an emergency, training went on continuously until they were quite proficient in their new equipment.
What had they had when they'd been at Sidi Rezegh? What tanks had they been driving?
I'm not quite sure, because we had a succession of tanks, and I'm not sure of the actual makeup. I think they were Crusaders or Valentines, but I'm not quite sure.
Had the regiment lost a lot of men at Sidi Rezegh, as well as the tank?
We lost quite a few men. I mean, I believe in strength we lost about maybe 20 to 30 men actually killed, and several were taken prisoner. But the majority managed to make it back to the British lines and eventually reformed as part of the regiment. We received reinforcements to make up the regimental strength, and they went into their new role with the American tanks as part of the 7th Armoured Brigade.
When you rejoined on the ship, the Birchbank, what were the expectations of the regiment? What did they think they were going to be doing next?
Well, the rumour had gone around that we were bound for Singapore. Now, we did not anticipate the problems of Singapore. We thought that we were going to a well-defended outpost of the British Empire. We hoped that we would have made a big contribution to defending it, and saw no reason otherwise. But having got as far as Colombo, the ships pulled into Colombo Harbour, and we had, I believe, a day and a bit in port. We were allowed to go ashore to look around and perhaps enjoy the place whilst we were there. But what struck us most visibly were the state of the big transport ships and liners that had just come from Singapore. One liner in particular was the Empress of Japan, a huge liner, which was absolutely chock-a-block with people in a terrible state of malnutrition. They carried about them all their worldly possessions, hunched and bunched on the decks, and from all accounts, they were the lucky ones who had made it out of the carnage of Singapore. One felt very sorry to see little kids who were obviously very hungry and badly clothed, living in appalling conditions on deck. And it made one think, what have we landed ourselves into? But we did not know that Singapore had fallen.
When did you find out about that?
We sailed from Colombo, I think 2 days after we arrived, and were in fact heading towards Singapore when the ship's canal announcement stated that Singapore had surrendered.
What effect did that have on you and the other people you knew?
Well, what was one to think? Here we were led to believe that Singapore was the bastion of the Far East and was well defended with many troops. When we heard that Singapore had fallen, we could not believe what we heard. Now, what was going to happen to us? We were filled with apprehension and fear, let me tell you, because we realized that the Japanese had been let loose in those Indian waters with their warships and submarines, perhaps, and planes. But then, after a short while, we were told that because Singapore had fallen, we were to be diverted to Rangoon in Burma. And that caused very many questions to be raised. What were we going to find there? How were we going to cope?
Were those questions answered?
Well, not immediately. When we arrived a day or two later at Rangoon, we pulled into the approaches to Rangoon. All we saw were blazing fires and oil dumps that had been set alight. When we arrived in the dock area, the ships docked as best they could. The place was deserted. Warehouses that had been full of stores and equipment lay open. Stores had been plundered and broken into and lay open on the quayside. And in fact, the amount of equipment by way of aircraft, fighting planes that were earmarked as lease-lend equipment to China were still in packing cases on the docks awaiting assembly. And lorries lined up ready for shipment to China were some of the things that we were most amazed to see.
Had you been given any sort of briefing on the overall situation and your likely actions before you landed?
No, when we arrived, the officers and NCOs were as much taken aback as we were. The whole port of Rangoon had been deserted and ransacked.
What was your role in the squadron at that time? Because you said you'd been put on the Strength of Sea Squadron. Had you been assigned to a particular duty while you were on the ship?
When the ships were loaded prior to sailing, every person had their allocated duty. But as you know, I was put aboard at the last minute.
Yeah.
And when we arrived in Rangoon, and I met my Sea Squadron officers and NCOs, I was the odd man out. So, knowing that I was a reasonably good driver, a beautiful Dodge three-ton truck, which belonged to the Rangoon police, was commandeered and put at my disposal. This was a beautiful truck, far, far superior to any of the trucks that the regiment brought.
What were the regimental trucks?
I believe they were Chevrolets, American equipment. The heavy trucks, like the three-tonners, were four-wheel drive. And obviously it became necessary for them to be so, to carry the loads on the kind of terrain that we would use in Burma. But I was most pleased with this vehicle, and it became my pride and joy.
Had you ever driven anything like it before?
I'd driven heavy trucks like this, but this was, if you like, the Rolls Royce of trucks.
Why was it so good? What was it about it that made it so desirable?
Well, the cab was wonderfully spacious. The seats were lovely sprung seats. Everything about it was easily accessible, whereas the British trucks, you had to clamber into a little door and uncomfortably sit in the seat, whereas this thing was a huge truck which suited me down to the ground. I was allocated a co-driver whom pleased me very much, because we were like characters. We got on well together, and all the maintenance and loading of these trucks we managed quite easily.
Did you know this man before he was given to you as co-driver?
Yes, I knew this fellow. His name, he wasn't a very intelligent type of man, but a better friend you could not wish for. His name was Robinson, and he spoke with a lisp, so we called him Frenchy Robinson. Now, he was my soulmate, and eventually got on very well with what we did together.
What was his background? Was he a regular soldier?
He was a regular soldier, but I didn't know very much about him, because as I just joined the regiment, this was my first meeting, so I didn't know him beforehand. And consequently, although we worked and fought together, we didn't really get to know each other on a personal basis. We were far too busy doing other things, rather than talking about home life and the like.
When the regiment arrived at Rangoon, do you have any idea of how long it took to get it unloaded, get its vehicles unloaded and prepared to move off?
Well, we arrived on the docks, or at least we docked at daybreak, and it took an hour or two to assess the situation. There were no dockers about around. There was no equipment that was usable from the docks. So we had to rely on the ship's crews organizing the unloading. They showed the troops, or some of the troops, how to use the donkey winches, the cranes, and the various hoists. And with a little instruction and use, soldiers became quite good dockers. And the more they did, the better they were at it. So eventually, full unloading took place under the supervision of the ship's crews.
Did you get involved in doing that? Because you'd been doing that kind of work just before, hadn't you?
No, unfortunately for me, when we unloaded, the tank crews, the people who had been allocated tanks, were asked to stay behind on the docks, especially the drivers and the commanders, whereas everybody else were taken by our own transport to a rubber tree plantation about 10 miles north of Rangoon, near the aerodrome of Mingaladon.
Yeah.
Mingaladon Aerodrome. And here we awaited the various vehicles that would shortly be joining us. I must add that when we arrived at Rangoon, all law and order had ceased. The prisoners from the local jails had been released. Inmates of a local lunatic asylum were also released. The zoos had released all the harmless animals, whereas the dangerous animals were put down. And during the day, various gangs of Burmese, perhaps Indian, looters roamed the streets, fueled by the easy access to spirits and alcohol. And it became necessary for the army or the people in charge of our operations to delegate patrols to control the treatment that these people were having.
What sort of scale were those patrols? What strength would a patrol be?
Well, they varied because a lot of people had been taken up to our rendezvous outside of Rangoon. There were some people busy on the docks. I believe there were some infantry regiments locally who were part of the garrison of Rangoon, and these patrols, I understand from later knowledge, that there were small patrols of maybe half a dozen people would traverse the streets of Rangoon trying to keep down the incidents of looting and misbehavior.
Did you get involved in doing any of that?
No, my job was to join my regiment where my vehicle was at our rendezvous, but we were sent down in groups with our vehicles to help with the unloading. Now, the unloading of the tanks went ahead in a specialized manner because of the arduous nature of lifting and loading tanks. However, as these warehouses were full of civilian stores and food, and dare I say it, spirits, beer, champagne, clothing, it was like walking into the midst of a London huge department store that had been laid waste. Now, for instance, our gunners, when called upon to fight, would need cleaning materials for the cleaning of their guns prior and after firing. What we managed to obtain for them were huge rolls of beautiful white silk, which were destined for the nobility or wealthy persons. So we acquired, in my opinion, quite correctly, huge rolls of beautiful white silk purely for the use of our gunners. Also, for myself, we managed to put on board my vehicle a great huge crate of Players' menthol cigarettes, tins of 50 in watertight tins. I don't know if you remember them, little tins. And I also took the pleasure of a few crates of beer and spirits, because we thought that over the foreseeable future, we might need little quantities of this to boost our spirits, and in fact prove to be worthwhile. But the desolation and the amount of equipment and food and stores, the quantity had to be seen to be believed. It was all just lying around waiting to be either procured for use, or eventually it would all be heaved into big heaps and set alight and burnt.
How long did that process take, the unloading and moving of stores and
the unloading,
construction and so forth?
The unloading took us about a day and a half to 2 days. Some vehicles were more difficult because of the ship's structure, whereas others were unloaded easily. But the boats, as they were unloaded, did not hang around. As soon as they were unloaded, the ship's crews bade farewell to us unfortunate troops, and they sailed off, hopefully, to safety, and left us to get on with the war.
Was there any sign of enemy action at this stage?
Occasionally we would be, fighter planes would fly over perhaps once or twice a day. They saw activity happening, and they would drop a few bombs and strafe areas that they thought were full of troops, but in fact they did not interfere greatly in our unloading process.
Was there any effective anti-aircraft fire directed against them?
There was little or nothing. We heard not a shot fired in defence. What was left of our RAF had dispersed. They were the only planes we ever saw for a long while were the ones belonging to the AVG, the American Volunteer Group, which was an American organization who had fighter planes painted like sharks, like the outline of a shark's head on the front. Now these were mercenaries, American mercenary fighters, who were being paid by the Chinese. For each plane, each Japanese plane that they downed, they received a certain price by way of recompense. But as regards our own RAF planes, we saw little or nothing. However, when our artillery had been organized, had been unloaded and organized and made ready for action, we did have our own brigade anti-aircraft protection to a certain degree.
What did that consist of? Did you see them?
No, everything. We all worked in our own little compartments.
What were you doing then? What was your work mainly during this time of unloading?
Well, I was helping down the docks to unload some of the provisions, because when we left Egypt, we had brought a lot of tinned food, meat and vegetables, biscuits, and various tins like bully beef, etc. Whereas when we arrived at the Rangoon docks, there was civilian food available. For example, we had meat and vegetable tins, which was far superior to the rations that we had. We were able to